Hello, freedom fiends. We are the arsonists of the airwaves, lighting fires of liberty in your heart with magic microphones of anarchy. Mr. Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. The Iron Hamster is away, and the Warrant Canary and Silver Snow Leopard will play. That's me, Derek J. of Victimless Crime Spree, and Bill Bupert of ZeroGov.com. Hey, Bill.
That's me, joined by Derek, so that we can philosophically terraform the planet one disobedient serf at a time.
Ooh, yeah. We'll be calming the hamster in your brain tonight and talking about all happy things like freedom and secession. So I wanted to title this Secession Fail, or Breaking Up is Hard to Do. So let's talk, Bill, about Scotland, where the voters of Scotland recently rejected the idea of independence for themselves and for their friends and family. I'm upset by this, but then I'm reminded that you really can't vote for more freedom, can you?
No, it's like fornicating for virginity. It just can't happen.
Yeah, and why is that? I mean, one of the reasons is that politicians are liars, and so, like, both options are not going to be legitimate. Like, I heard there were some politicians who were at the polls telling people that, like, the opposite vote was the good one. You know, like, oh, hey, if you want independence, vote no. Like, seriously, they were that much lying. Like, the vote for independence of Scotland was yes, and there were people at the polls saying, well, the government of the UK, they're going to give you all sorts of power over taxes and, like, healthcare. They're going to give you all the power that you want. Just stay together. Stay with us, baby. It was so weird. It sounded like a breakup. It sounded like a bad lover making promises. Like, did you hear some of the Queen saying you should strongly consider your actions?
Oh, this is the same Queen scolding them like a mother, of course. The same Queen that used the poverty fund back in the late 90s and the early 2000s to fund the heating of all the royal residences. Because I guess that the quarter billion dollar endowment they have yearly to maintain their royal lifestyle is simply insufficient. But that's what happens, though, when you have this very curious political class, the royals, who don't say they're a political class, but we most certainly know that they are because they live at the tax trough. Otherwise, they couldn't exist where they are. They do that by stealing people's money. That's what it all comes down to. You know, one thing I love about the Fiends is all about first principles. And the first principle of this is that you never ask for permission to go away, because what this really comes down to, Derek, is that let's suppose that Derek and his significant other live together, and that significant other beats the starch out of you on a daily basis to within an inch of your life. And either you go to the authorities, or you go to your family, you go to friends and say, man, I'm getting out of this. And the authorities come in and they say, you know what, Derek, if you attempt to get out of this abusive relationship, we will fine you, kidnap you, cage you, maim you, or kill you, depending on your level of resistance. Even though you didn't sign a contract, you're here because you exist here and you can't escape.
Well, it looks so ridiculous to me that every day, as people get poorer across Europe and the U.S. and the world, the Queen continues to ride around in these, like, 18th century style chariots, horse-drawn carriages with, you know, men with funny, fluffy hats, and she's got funny hats of her own. Like, it's getting ridiculous. Like, she's a parody of herself, almost. Like,
I'm surprised. Quaint.
Yeah,
it's quaint, but it subsidized at other people's expense.
Yeah, but isn't it going to become more and more obvious, you know, what's going on as the disconnect between the, like, clothing styles and the, you know, the way they speak? The disconnect, it's gotten so far to the point where the Queen is literally burning the poverty fund for heat.
You know,
she doesn't care about the people, and they're still, but like an abused lover, they just keep coming back. They say, I can't leave you. I can't stay mad.
This Scottish vote is a watershed for liberty, because it really does show that the Empress, in this case, has no clothes. And while they won't be able to vote their way out of it, secession doesn't begin at the level of the state. Secession begins between your ears. Have your audience put the index finger of their head, of their hand to their forehead and say the revolution begins here. Because once you start opting out, once you're saying that's unnecessary, it's just like the former governor of New Mexico said, Gary Johnson, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I come to a four-way stop in the middle of nowhere and there is no one for miles and I run that stop sign and I don't obey the law, I think I've discovered I'm a libertarian. In this case, it brings to the fore that people have to recognize that the only legitimate authority in their lives should be themselves.
Yeah, I like that. The example of running a red light at 4 a.m., you know, you've looked, made sure it's safe, and then decided for yourself whether or not you're going to go. You didn't just leave the decision up to the red or green light that the government gave you.
And it's in your self-interest to do no harm.
Right, of course. But that affords one a lot of freedom that you can't get just from voting. You can't vote for that type of freedom in the moment. So I was concerned about these Scots, these 45% of them who voted for independence now are effectively enslaved by their, their friends and family who just couldn't do away with the queen. They're too dependent. And
you know how I feel about voting, and they didn't sign off or pull the lever for their enslavement. All they did was certify their enslavement by pulling the lever.
Explain what you mean by that.
What that means is that we've had this conversation before, Derek, where I think that voting is violence, because what you're doing is you're legitimizing the state by participating in a state-run enterprise, the vote, at a state-run property location, the poll, in order to select state-approved candidates who will run every aspect of your life. You know what democracy is?
You don't think you can vote for freedom candidates? And
absolutely
that's
not.
No,
I don't. Because all democracy is, all the state is, all of this is because a few people are afraid of a few bad people, they put the worst people in charge of every aspect of everybody's lives to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's insane to me. I mean, that's psychopathic.
Daryl W. Perry wrote an excellent article at his website, fpp.cc, titled "Secessionist Movements Should Declare Independence from Politics." And
yes.
I thought that was well titled because, it kind of does show you can't vote for more freedom, but there are a lot of people who are interested in more freedom, and they need some sort of way to reclaim it. So how do they do it? If I'm a Scot who voted for independence and then lost this week, I'm feeling pretty depressed. I'm feeling enslaved by my fellow man. How do I get out of it? How do I get more free?
You work in the underground economy. You work in the gray market economy. You work less. You're less effective. You use...
You're less effective. What do you mean?
You're less effective as a tax slave.
Uh-huh.
And also what you would do is you would play some kind of guerrilla theater where you can show the state for the idiocy that it is. What you could do, for instance, is you can use the state to its maximum effect. If the state demands that, for instance, that you show up at court, then you use the discovery process. You use the interrogatory process. You make sure that cop shows up when you're there. You use the law to the fullest extent, and if a significant critical mass percentage of people do that, such as traffic court in these United States, what you have is a system collapsing onto itself because the people are actually leveraging the things that supposedly are in their favor, but they're doing it to put a monkey wrench in the machine of the government.
So why don't you believe in monkey wrenching with politicians? Like, why is it okay to use the state against itself for court, but not for, electing a freedom candidate?
Well, because I don't think that freedom candidates exist. Because it's just like that myth of limited government. It's sort of like believing, I said earlier, about fornicating for virginity. That's what you do when you pull that lever.
But what about the anarchists who exist in the New Hampshire State House? I mean, surely they're repealing laws. That's a good thing.
Boy, it's very curious to me, an anarchist in a state house. Let me have time to grok that.
Yeah, but that's true.
I'm sure they're absolutely stateless people who are in there, and they're on committees, and they're deciding and voting, by the way, in either a majority fashion or a minority fashion, on altering laws, compromising on laws, or maybe even getting rid of them, but nonetheless participating in a process that does nothing more than oils the shackles and manacles to their enslavement.
Yeah. Well, I would think of it as the same way that you're describing the court process of like using their rules, like, oh, you've got these rules that say if I have a traffic ticket, for example, let's say, and the cop and the judge and everyone's all ready for court, and I call in like an hour ahead of time and say, I'm sick today, sorry, can we reschedule? Well, that ties up all their time, makes them have to go through the whole process again, reschedule, get the cop off his beat, and then bring him back in. You know,
explain, Derek, by drawing a distinction here, and that's that when you're gumming up the works in a courthouse, you're affecting the immediate vicinity of what you're dealing with. Every time you pull that lever, what you're saying is, whether you're voting for or against, you're saying, I approve of the political system for making decisions. What you're saying is, I approve of a citizen that doesn't use good economics, that doesn't use non-harmful ways to do things, that doesn't use cooperation, persuasion.
Well, wait a minute.
But uses the police state to ensure it.
But by that logic, you're also using the state when you call up the court and beg permission for, you know, a date change. Say, oh, I'm sick, can we reschedule? You're using the system. I mean, at some point, anarchists are going to use the system to monkey wrench it, you know, into
non-existence. I think we'll have a gentleman's disagreement on this, because I think that it's philosophically different between gumming up when you're ensnared in the system and you've been issued a ticket for which they want you to pay in either, you know, blood, cage time, or money, and you're fighting that system by making it wrap its own tentacles around itself. I think that's useful, but every time you pull that lever, every politician on earth, from left to right, collectivist to individualist, smiles beatifically on you, because what you've done is you've said, I approve of this message.
Yeah. Yeah, that is disturbing to me. I do get, you know, voting in most things, like in most areas, it seems pretty icky. It seemed pretty icky when I went and did it here recently in New Hampshire at the New Hampshire primary. Actually, I brought a camera rolling through with me throughout the whole process. And then at the end, after finally voting, recording the whole process all the way through, doing my civic duty, as they say, I later found out that what I had done was completely illegal and was a multiple counts felony, because I had recorded the process without the consent of the people who were around me. So I had no idea, even though I was trying to do my civic duty, trying to do a good thing, I actually did something that could have landed me in jail for decades. Worms. Again.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, this is Squisclar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow!
Worms. It's the Freedom Fiends. Yeah, Michael Dean is away. He's probably at home in his sweatpants, eating from a carton of Ben and Jerry's, watching reruns of Mad About You. In the studio, it's me, Derek J, and across the tubes is Bill from Zero
in
Gov.
In the interwebs.
Yes, through the tubes of the interwebs. So I can't convince ZeroGov.com that a little bit of gov can be okay. Just a little bit.
You know,
of
you're
gut.
Talking about an STD. Why would I want a little bit of that?
I don't know, because this one's funky and fun and has some benefits.
Yeah, but it leaves funky carbuncles on you.
Yeah, I was saying before we left off that it made me uncomfortable to vote last I did. I've only voted twice in my life, full disclosure, and both times were in New Hampshire.
I'm really happy you needed to take a shower after you voted.
Yeah, it was that gross.
There's hope for you.
Well, actually, it was pretty weird because not only did I vote, but I was one of the first in line to vote, and I immediately following voting went to campaign for the whole rest of the day for a friend of mine who was running as a state rep here in New Hampshire on the platform of legalized pot. Lower the drinking age to 18 and allow bars to choose their own hours. So allow them to stay open as late as they like. And
yeah,
I thought it was a
great
platform.
Those should be delegitimized. They should be decriminalized. The state should have nothing to do with determining any of that. And this is part of the pratfalls of voting because you're buying into a system that forcibly limits what are basically inalienable rights, and that's foolish.
Well, it's okay, because I had all my hopes that voting could work dashed by the most apathetic group of voters, the college vote, because that's where he was running. He was running on the chance that the college kids are going to say, oh, lower the drinking age, legalize pot, I'm for that, let's go to the polls. But they weren't interested, even though they want more freedom. A lot of them responded with the answer that I should expect. I've got that freedom already, they said. You know, I've got the freedom to drink whenever I want or to smoke cannabis if I want. And I don't need a politician to give me that kind of freedom. What do you think about that?
Bully for them if they didn't make it to the voting booth to say, hey, I want to use the government as a proxy for violence against my neighbor, my friends, and family because it makes me feel good to wear that stupid label on my lapel that says, hey, I voted and I'm a moron.
Well, he didn't win. He got 30 votes. His challenger got 102. And so it wasn't very close, but there weren't very many people who voted either.
If he won, it's still majority tyranny.
Well, so there's going to be someone who fills these seats anyway, right? So why not fill them with people who want to repeal laws?
Now, I object to serial murder and serial killing, whether at the government level or the private entrepreneurs who do it. I object to that. So for me to come out and say, you know what, I think you should limit your kill bag to 12 people. That's wrong.
No,
because it should
zero.
Be zero.
To zero.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you can't vote and say zero.
Why not?
It's the same reason why Scotland, going back to the original question here, they, you know, just because the yes vote supposedly lost, what we did win in is, again, philosophically terraforming, where people are looking at the government again and again, more and more today, and saying, man, this is just so wrong. Every time I pass by some unfortunate taxpayer who's been pulled over by the paramilitary cockroaches here in my great state of Arizona, I think to myself, ah, another convert to liberty.
Yeah, that's probably true. I would like to, I used to hold signs outside of the First Amendment Stone in Philadelphia, and I would try and provoke a reaction from the passersby. I think one, if I were to remake those signs or stand out there today, would be consent to the governed? ? Because I think most people, that's on their minds anyway. Maybe not in those words, but they're asking themselves, you know, hey, how does the government have the authority to do this? How do they have the authority to get these tanks that I didn't ask for? And why do my local police have a tank anyway?
Or new, you know, members of your audience need to watch Larkin Rose's video presentation, Mr. Jones Plantation.
Oh yeah, that's
it. Just answers the questions that you and I are posing so much more eloquently than we can do in the limited time we have left.
Well, so like, I want freedom, Bill, and I want secession down to the individual level. So I
me
want
too.
To declare myself a country, the country of Derek, and I can do whatever I want so long as I'm not invading any other countries, basically.
May I suggest that you do that right now for this radio audience?
All right, I declare my personal independence. Although, I don't know if I can really do that without being independent, and I'm not there yet. I can't grow my own food. I don't have my own energy. Let's talk about that. Or can you really be truly free just by declaring it? Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Ross Ulbricht was arrested by the FBI in 2013 and charged with victimless crimes in relation to allegedly operating the Bitcoin-based Silk Road black market. He has been in a prison cell awaiting trial ever since. If he did it, he's a hero for making the black market a safer place. If he did not, he's a man wrongfully accused. Either way, if you love freedom and want to end the war on drugs, Ross and his family need your support. You can learn more and help fund his defense at FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Welcome back, Freedom Fiends. Everything the state says is a lie, and everything it has stolen. The words of Friedrich Nietzsche. We return. You know, while we were away, I made some bacon, and Bill reminded me that that is one of the great things about capitalism. Is that strangers can work together to cooperate. I don't know the people who made this bacon, but we sure do cooperate. Thanks for that reminder, Bill.
Well, exactly, and I would urge all of your audience members to read I Am Pencil by Leonard Reed, or see the great video that I found called I Am Pencil.
I think it's I Pencil.
That's right. Yeah. I stand corrected.
That's okay, but it's basically the same concept, is that it's a story told from the point of view of a pencil, right, being made?
That's right. Did you notice, though, when you went to the courthouse, and you talked about this in other shows, when you went to the courthouse, you had to go through a metal detector.
Every
time. You had to surrender all your stuff, all that. Now, why is that? Well, there's two reasons for it, of course.
Got to be safe.
It's for safety, but it's also for an employment program for those overweight bailiffs.
Yeah,
who tend
right.
to be sleeping lazily by the metal detectors. But if you treated people the way the court system in America does, wouldn't you want to have them stripped of all weapons when you're doing something to them?
Yes.
But of course you would. And see, that's the thing with this. Capitalism, I wouldn't say there's so many fundamentals to why capitalism works. And when I say capitalism, I mean unfettered market economies in which the state doesn't exist any longer.
Right.
In a freed market, F-R-E-E-D. But what makes them so astonishing is not only do they produce these things with limited and finite information, like the pencil, like your bacon, but they do this by establishing a cooperation peacefully between strangers. How often do you have encounters with the government where the people who are in charge of the government have guns or bulletproof glass between you and them?
Yeah, I wish I could say no thanks when the government people want to pat me down and make me walk through metal detectors. Because, you know, it's not that I have any violent intentions when I'm walking into a courthouse or anywhere in particular. But I want the ability to defend myself if there were something bad going down. I do not want to be reliant upon the government folks when
they should sign a piece of paper that says that we take on any liability in your protection. It's like when people ask me, Bill, why do you carry a gun? I tell them, because I think it's immoral to outsource my self-defense to others without their consent.
That's right. Well,
so and that's what this all comes down to with what we're talking about with the courthouse scenario.
Well, the bailiffs also here in Keene, they recently threatened an individual at a recent trial for chalking outside of the courthouse, claiming that it was the courthouse property, right, and not public property. I don't know how he works that one out in his head, but he was threatening to call the police because there was an activist writing messages, political messages, in chalk on the sidewalk.
That's where we are, Derek, in America with a K. You were mentioning in an earlier segment where you said that, you know, it's when you did this recent thing with voting, bringing a camera with you, caused you to make very felonious invasions of the place you were at. Yeah. Everything is against the law.
Everything is against the law. Even later that day, Bill, I was at the college doing some outreach, letting students know that there was this great Liberty candidate who they could vote for if they weren't so apathetic, and they or principled, if perhaps they were all just, you know, anarchists. But that caused some controversy too. The campus security actually brought me up to the third floor under duress, saying that they were going to call the police on me if I didn't come with them, and if I didn't stop telling students that there was this great Liberty candidate who was running in their ward. So I wasn't, I mean, the First Amendment, regardless of what you think about it, was originally written or intended to protect free speech, especially political speech. Like,
oh, that's garbage, Derek.
Hey, like, this candidate exists. I know, but that's the lie they tell us. Like, we know that's garbage, but that's the lie they put out. Like, hey, the First Amendment is to protect political speech so that you have the right to, you know, to talk about politics stuff and go vote for the candidate you want, right? That's supposed to be the...
You know that I'm a severe skeptic of the Constitution, and I think the Articles of Confederation, if we must labor under that kind of document, is far superior in so many ways. But a mere 7 years after the 1791 ratification of the Constitution, I urge all of your listeners to find a book called American Aurora, where you will find out about Benjamin Franklin's son or grandson who owned a newspaper who was hounded literally to death by the federal government because he dared to criticize them.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Now you do.
Well, I'll have to do some of my own research afterwards, but...
Please do.
You know, I want personal independence. I want freedom from these petty bureaucrats, and that's why I moved to New Hampshire. I thought maybe if I moved from New Jersey or Philadelphia to a place where the state motto is live free or die, well, then maybe the people who live there will embody a culture of freedom. But to be greeted by these bailiffs with threats of arrest just shows me we have a long way to go, but also, like, we can declare personal independence, because what this activist chose to do, despite the threats, was to continue to chalk and say, I'm going to do this, I'm not hurting anyone, and this is my form of peaceful protest. Although, we brought this up last time, that it's strange to do a political protest on so-called government property, because who really has a right to it? Who owns it? Like, I would say it's government property, so I don't like to do protests on their property, you know?
Well, public property, I mean, whenever anybody uses that stupid term public, and I'm not calling you stupid, Derek,
right.
I'm just saying, whenever they use that term, you need to substitute government. It's not public schooling. It's government schooling.
But does that mean stay out of
it? It's not public TV. It's government TV.
So as a propertarian, do you say just stay away from those places? Don't go to any government-owned properties?
You know, I have to use the roads just right, as everybody else does, in this Milgram Stanford experiment that's harnessed to the Stockholm syndrome that we live in, that we call the U.S. today. So I have to use all those things if I have to conduct my business. So it's one of the tragedies of the commons. I don't like going to a courthouse, but if I've been ensnared in some kind of, you know, criminal enterprise thing where I have to get involved with the government, then I have no choice but to do that. Otherwise, I surrender my ultimate freedom, which is the freedom of myself to conduct myself as I wish, because they're going to come and trap me, ensnare me, kidnap me, cage me, and do all the other awful things.
You know, this conversation has me sort of regretting the route that I took looking to acquire my concealed carry license. So, you know, of course, I don't believe that the government has authority over me to determine whether or not I can put a gun in my pocket, but... You know, that's what the law says. That's where I exist today, is in a state where I have to fill out a form and ask permission from the local police, and then they say yes or no. And so I did that process, but I found out that if I just ignored that and carried a gun concealed anyway, it's just a Class A misdemeanor. It's like a 1 year in jail and $1,000 fine. I could handle that. I mean, it's,
you know,
better to take
it
on the
air.
Yeah, it's better to take criminally.
And let's stop using the plantation owner's parlance, too. Don't ever say concealed carry. Always say discreet carry.
Why is that?
The reason they say, because the reason they say concealed is because you're hiding something. What are you hiding? You're hiding something that either others or the government doesn't want to see.
Hmm.
If that's ever the answer to the question, it's because the government wants to call it concealed. Because you'll notice the transparency goes in only one direction. Every transaction you take part in as a human being can be subpoenaed quite literally and quite figuratively in the government sense. Anything they want, they can get from you under duress if they wish and if you surrender it. In the opposite direction, the government says, we're not going to be transparent to you at all, and why don't you go and try and make us that way, because we won't comply.
Well, one of the ways that I feel like I've increased the freedom in my life is by moving to New Hampshire. And I don't know how you feel about that. I know you like Arizona, but... the geographic area.
I'm a signer.
Okay, great. So does that mean that you would intend to relocate if 20,000 Liberty lovers all decide to convene on the geographic location known as New Hampshire?
Yeah, as long as they seceded from the Union, I would be there in a flash.
Wow. Well, yeah. What's the significance of seceding from the Union if the individual movers have all seceded to the individual level?
Well, the primary reason for it is because within the tax jurisdiction known as the United States, you and I, and my hat's off to those in the gray economy and the underground economy who've already done this, if I participate as I do in the above ground economy and comply with all the laws because of being a family man, I've got to do that. Otherwise, I end up in a cage.
Yeah.
I have to exist that way. I've got no choice whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I do think that secession into constituent parts, no matter how tyrannical those parts may become, it increases the freedom for people to vote with their feet. Right now, because of the lack of secession planet-wide, it's hard for me to vote with my feet and be free.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to see New Hampshire secede because it borders with Canada. So there would be a section of the former United States where I guess a new type of border patrol or lack thereof would exist. And that would be pretty cool to see, you know, who chooses to migrate through New Hampshire up to Canada, or even if they choose to do that at all.
It would be. It'd be something to behold. And I think, you know, as I've said before, secession is not the exception, it is the rule of history.
So you're a signer for the Free State Project, and for folks who aren't familiar, they can learn more at freestateproject.org. And
ironically enough, I did the keynote speech on secession in 2012, and after I finished it and took all the questions, one of the board members came up to me and said, would you sign? And I signed right there on the stage.
Wow! That's awesome. Is that on video?
I think it is. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is. My secession video is available on YouTube. Type in Secession Pork Fest in Beaufort, and you'll probably find it there.
Oh, man, that is so cool. What speech did you give this year at Pork Fest?
I gave a number of speeches. I spoke on the police state. I was on an abortion clinic debate. I did a four-hour presentation on irregular warfare conflict, history and practice. I talked about zero gov and why limited government is impossible. And I talked about why anarchy, abolitionism, and being free is essentially the best way to conduct yourself as a human being.
Man, those are brilliant topics. And you could find all of those by just Googling.
Actually, you can't.
Oh. Well, hopefully you can find some of those by Googling Porkfest Bill Buport. The videos will be online sooner or later. We're talking secession on the Fiends. Have you declared personal independence? Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Welcome back, Fiends. the Worms, the Freedom Worms. And here with me is Bill Bupert.
It is I.
Yeah, and we're making the world a better place. We're making it okay, safe for freedom, by helping you declare your independence. Both of us are, I didn't realize this, Bill, but both of us are signers of the Free State Project Statement of Intent, which means...
Well, there it is. I'm going to live in your basement when I move there.
That's cool. My Liberty Bunker.
That's right.
Hopefully I'm a land-owning person one day. I don't own any land. I don't have a basement or a bunker yet.
I used to, but I've sold it all.
You really?
Oh, you had
a bunker?
Yeah. No, land ownership.
Oh, okay.
Ownership.
All right. That's fair enough. But I could picture you maybe having a bunker. Those are getting popular, by the way. I saw there are like companies popping up across the U.S. that build a bunker in the ground, and they could do it for relatively cheaply, like less expensive than a small house. You know, so if you want to live in the ground in your escape bunker, there's an option for you.
And all your doors and windows are round like hobbits.
That would be cute. I would like that.
It would be.
But if that's not an option for you, maybe you want to vote with your feet, like Bill and I, and relocate to be around other people who think like you do. I certainly have benefited from just being around people who are willing to disobey. It's empowering just to be in close proximity to these people. Like the story that I shared earlier where an activist decided to put chalk on the sidewalk in, you know, even though an authority figure said he was going to call the police to have the police do bad things to him for the crime of writing on the sidewalk. Well, he did it anyway. And I like that sort of courage. I want to be surrounded by people who follow their conscience instead of whatever the lawman says.
Because we must question obedience, because that's the keystone of being liberated as human beings.
Yeah. So about that, like, I like being surrounded by disobedient folks, those who are, or rather those who are obedient to their own conscience. And I grapple with this question, though. Which is more important to you, Bill, freedom or fun?
You know, I it's an interesting question. It would take us probably a whole episode to really parse that out. But I would suggest to you that once you do liberate yourself from having your life run by others, fun is easier to have.
Yeah, but what if you can't? Like, what if freedom is unachievable in our lifetimes, and it would just be better off to live as a happy slave? You ever think about that, or does that ever enter your mind?
I do think about that, but I have to rage against the dying when it comes to that. I can't accept it.
Well, why? Like, there are all those people in Scotland who are like, well, let's stay together. Let's stick it out for the kids or for whoever.
Now look, when you parse out that Scottish vote, you discover that the young people voted almost 75% for yes, and the people who are 60 years of age or older, who were guaranteed their pensions by the English government,
ding ding ding,
they were told 75% of them wanted the no vote because they wanted to have the pensions. What they've done is they have quite literally harness the young people as the engine for their well-being now and into perpetuity by making sure they're just as slavish as they've been their entire lives because they didn't do the right thing.
Yeah. The cycle has to end somewhere. I would think that it would end when they run out of money, but then I'd be wrong because they just keep going and they're out of money. But the
good news is, Derek, you and I are both Austrian economists. This party will end, and it won't end well. The longer they kick this economic can down the road, the more explosive it's going to be at the end when this finally collapses.
Are you sure? Because I am an Austrian economist. I believe, you know, that that which is unsustainable will end. But I'm starting to doubt that, Bill. I'm starting to question the power of the FedGov and the central banks around the world to kick this can down the road indefinitely. Seems like they have the power. They've been doing it for this long. What could possibly be different about the future? Well, we'll learn the answer to that question on the other end. Plus, we've got a story of a disobedient gubernatorial candidate who was arrested for driving without a license and a disobedient kindergarten teacher. I don't think she'll be arrested, but she should get some attention for not obeying the feds. Freedom fiends. Rear. Worms.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Worms, worms, worms. Meow. Freedom fiends. Tasing you with liberty. From across the internet. It's like a bacon and freedom injection into your brain. We're here talking secession. Who owns you? Do you have the right to opt out? Does your government have your consent? Maybe you should vote with your feet, like me and Bill. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
I am wonderful.
Great to be philosophically terraforming with my good friend Derek J.
Yeah, let's keep at it. You know, before we left off, we were asking ourselves the question, which is more important, fun or freedom? And I grapple with this one every day, honestly, because sometimes working for freedom, you know, some days just aren't fun. And I think that the most important thing to do is have fun. I think it's more important than freedom because, you know, you said that if we have freedom, then we will have fun, right? And I believe that is true. But I also think that the way to freedom is fun. Like, if you're doing something unfun to achieve freedom, it's never going to happen. That's not the right way.
But we also live in a fundamentally sick system in which, from corporate welfare cheats to welfare recipients at the lower economic strata, they can have their interpretation of fun by bloating themselves with cheap carbohydrates, not working at the lower strata, and watching television all day, or being on their phones all day, or, you know, being electronically leashed,
yeah,
in some fashion. But, you know, they're quite literally, as Bastiat taught us, they're living at the expense of others. And I guess that could be interpreted as fun, but is it moral fun? I don't think that's moral fun.
Not all fun will lead to freedom. You know, like watching the TV all day and eating a bunch of carbohydrates, you know, yes, that might be fun. That's not going to achieve freedom.
Well, we know what that will achieve. You'll be bloated by cheap carbohydrates, and yes, your ability to think and to lead your life cognitively and be reflective and examined will diminish to zero.
Yeah, but people's attitudes seem to be changing. Not only do they want fun, and they also want freedom. The Reuters.com reported this week that the failed Scottish vote to pull out from the United Kingdom stirred secessionist hopes for some in the United States, where almost a quarter of people are open to their states leaving the union, according to a new Reuters Ipsos poll. So almost 25% of Americans polled, this was recent, from August 23rd to September 16th, so this was very recent, said they strongly supported or tended to support the idea of their state breaking away, while just over 50% of respondents strongly opposed or tended to oppose the notion. So what does this tell you, Bill?
You know, I'm strongly opposed to polling as a,
really?
A way to, because I think that it's a fake way to determine what people's sentiments are. But when I call you on the phone and I say, hey, what's your favorite ice cream? And what do you think about secession?
Chocolate
and what do you think about these
yes.
things? Thank you, Derek. That was brilliant. But nonetheless, when I call people, people have no stake whatsoever, no skin in the game on their response to that conversation. And they could be manipulated in such a fashion that you can convince people. For instance, you and your audience are probably familiar with, where they said they used the chemical variation of water. Of course, it's H2O, but they called it, I think, OH2, and talked about the harmful effects, like people drowning, yeah, things like that.
Yes.
And most people said, yes, we should ban water. So I don't think it holds water.
That's a good point. Many people may support something in word, but not actually in deed. So Americans may say, yeah, I'm for independence, I'm for breaking away. But
wait, when it comes time I to can't do have anything, my hands in my neighbor's pocket.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to leave now.
Oh, never mind. Yeah, never mind. That brings up a good point. There was another poll done by Reason, Reason.com, where they asked the same questions, but then included the caveat of, oh, and you have to pay for it. So it was like, do you want more government services in X, Y, and Z? And most people were like, yeah, I want more. And then they were like, do you want more of these government services and you have to pay for it? And they were like, no, we don't need that. So it does, the way questions are asked and, you know, what's implied about the action that a respondent has to take, needs to be taken into account.
The government gets away with accountancy practices that it prosecutes corporations and private firms to do in the U.S. It doesn't have to do Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. It doesn't have to pay taxes on what it does. Plus, it has this very unique capability of taking our unborn progeny and saying, we're going to saddle them with debt so that we can fill septic tanks today.
Well, I think it was interesting. This article at least reports that the urge to sever ties with Washington cuts across party lines and regions, though Republicans and residents of rural Western states are generally warmer to the idea than Democrats and Northeasterners.
You know what? That's because there's no more real bifurcation in the USSA than between ruralites and urbanites, because urbanites pride themselves on their lack of self-sufficiency, whereas ruralites tend not to be that way.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't they just, maybe urbanites love capitalism and love the separation of, not separation of powers, but you know what I mean, where you get a benefit from specialization. Like the urban environments, maybe they don't want to be farmers and have their own gardens. They like going to the grocery store.
I would suggest to you that urban centers are probably the most vital orchid hothouses for collectivism on the planet today.
But that doesn't make
and have
them
been
all
on
bad.
The planet historically.
Come on.
It certainly doesn't. But
don't
now
you
what you're
live
doing
in an urban environment?
I do not. Now what you're doing is you're condemning voters again. And now I applaud that, though.
How am I condemning voters?
Because what you're saying is that if I'm taking a wide swath of urban people and comparing them to the rural people and saying that there are parts of the urban enclave,
right,
who want to be self-sufficient, well, I apply the same argument to voters where you say, well, some of them want freedom, but in essence, what they're doing is they're pulling a lever and saying, I may want freedom, but I'm going to use proxy violence in order to get my way.
Well, so now let's talk about how listeners can achieve the freedom, the real freedom, secession to the individual level in their own lives.
Yes.
We've talked about voting with your feet. Moving to New Hampshire is one way that both of us have decided is going to be our way. But then I've moved here. I'm not there yet. So,
but it's not only that. It's not only your physical location. This is such a great topic, Derek. We could talk for hours on this. Home education is a form of secession. Growing your own food is a form of secession. Canning your own food is a form of secession. Taking care of your own natural health and doing the very opposite of what the government and the FDA tell you to do is a form of secession.
Yeah.
Critical thinking is a form of secession. Taking your television and throwing it in the dumpster, that's a form of secession. And these are all things that everybody in your audience can do tomorrow morning.
I agree with that. And they might be more effective than even relocating.
I think so too, because once again, you're philosophically terraforming.
Yeah, well, and explain what that means.
Okay, what terraforming is let's say we want to move to Venus, but we want Venus to have Earth-like conditions. We would go to Venus and we would transform it through various technologies so that it would become more like Earth. The philosophical terraforming that abolitionists seek is we want to form a planet that is inhabited by peaceful freeholders who do business with complete strangers in a cooperative fashion that doesn't require violence, and we form our society on nonviolence instead of initiated force.
You dreamer. That sounds like a utopia.
Oh, you're right, though, but I'm a dangerous daydreamer because I do dream during the day.
Hopefully not while driving.
Well, you know what? I'm riffing off of either T.E. Lawrence or Michael Collins, where I think it was Lawrence who said, the most dangerous visionary is the one who dreams during the day.
Yeah, hopefully.
And that's us.
Yeah, that is true. Changing the world every day a little bit. You know, I started my own garden for the first time this year. It is. I started my own garden, Bill. Can I get some applause there?
Please.
Yeah, thank you. And
that's a golf clap, by the way.
But I don't, you know, I'm not there. Like, I don't feel freer. Like, I thought, okay, once I have this garden, now I'll be able to eat from it, and I'll be more free. But I'm not. I still use the grocery store. I still have to depend. I'm interdependent on my friends and neighbors. When will I be there? When will I know that I'm totally free?
You won't be there, and it's much more inexpensive for me to go to the farmer's market, get my organic produce, and can it at home than it is for me to grow it myself. The value in growing food yourself is that you see how that process works, and you make all the mistakes that you need years under your belt to be a real good food gardener. But the other thing is, it's so interesting you bring that up about going to the grocery store. We are not islands, and that's what capitalism, abolitionism, and anarchism prizes, is that, Derek, I'll bet that you're very, very, very good at social media, camcorders, technology, that kind of thing.
Yes, I am.
I don't have the capability you do, but you're my friend, you could be my colleague. And potentially, I'll say, you know what? I may even hire Derek to do that for me. Now, if you need firearms training, or you need help in home education, or you need help with gardening, or you need classes in critical thinking, or you want to talk to me about history, things like that, we'll work out a barter transaction. We'll work out a cash transaction, or we'll just have some fine Scottish spirits to celebrate it.
I think that's the thing that gets me, and I'm not sure quite yet to be happy or sad about it, but it seems like the Freedom Project is never ending. That I'll never get there. And I think that's what upsets me a little bit. That, hey, I moved. I'm supposed to be free now. You mean there's more work to do?
Derek, you said you're an Austrian, right?
Yes.
Do you consider yourself a competent Austrian economist?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think I can do a decent job.
But it takes a lot of work to get there, doesn't it?
Sure, yeah, lots of
reading. I mean, it takes a large investment of study to get to that level.
Yeah.
And there's mental
exercises and like
exactly.
Out. Yeah.
And there are these four variations of conscious, unconscious, and competence, incompetence. What you have with the government is you have the left side of the spectrum, as it were, if I put this in an axiom, where you have unconscious incompetence. What conscious competent, because you have unconscious incompetence, then you have conscious incompetence, then you have unconscious competence, then you have conscious competence.
Whoa,
which is the highest mastery level. Okay. And all conscious competence means is that you know why you can do the right thing. Now, Gladwell would tell us in the book, The Tipping Point, why unconscious competence is so important. Because I'll bet Michael Dean can listen to somebody on the radio, and he can determine what they're listening to it on, what their levels are, why their radio program sucks, how he can improve it, and he can do that in a snapshot. Because Michael has taken it upon himself to be the expert in doing this kind of thing. I suppose there are things you do in social media that may be the very same thing. I've got those talents. Everybody has those talents.
And that's how listeners of The Fiends become experts in secession and freedom, becoming independent souls. We're going to become experts on declaring independence when we come back. Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF,
We don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Breakups, crying foul, and living free here on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Bupert.
That is I.
And me, Derek J. Hey, Bill, the trend seems to be moving towards independence. Young people are saying overwhelmingly, I want to be free of this government. I don't condone what it does in my name, and I don't want to pay for it. And I don't want to support it in word or deed. And I think part of the reason for that is because of the internet, that young people are, they have better access to information than maybe their older counterparts. And it's easier to see the hypocrisy of government and the true evil that it is. This headline went probably unnoticed because it appeared on September 11th. Take a listen. 15-year mandatory minimum federal sentence for possessing shotgun shells. No shotgun. Almost 20 years after past felonies. So this was from September 11th, the Sixth Circuit Court, United States v. Young. Edward Young received a mandatory 15-year prison sentence for the crime of possessing 7 shotgun shells in a drawer. He came into possession of the shells while keeping a neighbor's, or while helping a neighbor sell her late husband's possessions. And when he eventually discovered them, he didn't realize that he wasn't allowed to own them. He was a felon, but he didn't realize that, you know, the not owning a firearm thing is a felon extended to ammunition. So this, now,
this is the evil that is government today. I mean, that's almost like Exhibit A.
Yeah, I mean, so it's clear that his crime. The punishment doesn't match the crime. And there's allegedly this Eighth Amendment supposedly.
And there's
to protect,
no victim.
But yeah, there's no victim. And it's supposed to, the government's supposed to protect individuals against harm, first of all. And then here it is doing harm. And then not just regular harm, not just like slap on the wrist, oh, you shouldn't have done that. But like serious, you're going to federal prison for over a decade. Harm.
The government violates the Hippocratic Oath of do no harm every day. The government cannot exist unless it violates the Ten Commandments for those who adhere to the Bible. It can't exist, and it can't exist without practicing the use of political violence against noncombatants, which is the definition of terrorism. It cannot exist on a daily basis without participating in terroristic activities to advance itself.
Well, I have a lot of hope because, you know, this is in black and white, and it's not going to disappear from the internet. This is at the Washington Post. And while the Washington Post may have come and gone 50 years ago on my doorstep and then into the trash can, today it's going to exist forever. I'm going to be able to look up this article, share it with my friends. It looks like there have been over 200 comments. It's been shared thousands of times across the internet, if not, you know, tens of thousands. So this stuff can really spread. I just have a lot of hope that young people can see the true evil that is government and then peacefully separate themselves, vote with their feet, and then change their lives.
It's a broadcast dissemination of the evil that government is that's available via the internet.
Yes, thank you, internet. Thanks, Al Gore.
Yeah, absolutely. Stop plate tectonics now. Every time somebody says Al Gore, I have to say that.
Right, and global warming or global climate change.
Oh my God, please, spare me.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Is there climate change? Yes. Is it caused by man? I don't know. Is it not caused by man? I don't know. Is it possible to determine with certitude whether it is? It is not. Problem solved.
Problem solved. I think we covered that one. You know what we haven't discussed yet, though, and I think this is so important to the idea of individual secession or voting with your actions or voting with your wallet, is using encryption and cryptography to, what's the word? You didn't use conceal, but to
discreet.
Make our
discreet
words
communications.
Discreet. Yes, discreet communications.
Yeah.
We don't want to, it's not that we're concealing something that's bad. It's just that I value privacy. And I want to reclaim that privacy that government stole from me by wiretapping all my phones. And if I use encryption, if I use a password that makes my communications all garbled and then give that password to my friends so they can read my garbled words, then I've increased the freedom in my life, haven't I?
I think that you have, but I remain a skeptic as to if there's any cryptography that's available for purchase or use in the United States that does not have a backdoor built into it.
But this is one of the ways that governments actually enhance our freedom, I believe. Because these governments, they work against each other. They don't want to cooperate, not all of them. They want to keep secrets from each other. And so they have to use encryption too. The technologies that they develop to do bad things, we can hijack and use for good. This is The Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Worms, 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 worms. Meow! Meow, meow, meow. Welcome back. This is The Fiends, where we're talking about cannabis and gun control being out of control. Maybe we'll talk about some civil disobedience and some capitalism or crapitalism today. Vape makers looking to ban vaping. What could that be about? Well, Bill, I think this is important. We've been talking so much about independence, declaring personal independence. That's something that our listeners are just going to have to do on their own. We just can't hold their hand through it. They're going to have to grow up and be independent without us. Or maybe they can join us in New Hampshire. What do you think? Well, Bill, I sure can't hear you, but I wish you were here joining me. I will talk instead about the kindergarten teacher who might get in trouble for an act of civil disobedience. She wrote a letter on Facebook to the teachers and parents of her students, starting out, quote, "There's a good possibility I will be fired, but," and then she explains in a lengthy letter that I won't recap, or I won't read the whole thing for you here. She says, basically, hey, there's this test, another state test, that I'm supposed to administer to all of your students, and it requires a one-on-one session. I'm not going to do it. It's going to take too much classroom time. We take enough of these tests. I'm good at gauging whether or not my students are learning. I'm not going to do this state-mandated test. And the parents and administrators have her back. They are supporting her. Isn't that encouraging?
I can't believe it. It's incredible to me that they would do that, because usually, you know, our Sovietized school system is so bloated with administrators who couldn't tie their shoes in the correct fashion, much less do much with their education degrees. But for them to actually come out with almost a vote for freedom, it amazes me.
It is amazing, and it doesn't look like she's going to face any sort of punishment, which she totally expected. She expected to be fired. But then again, should she be fired just for following her conscience?
And well, then, she shouldn't be working at a government school in the first place.
Yes, that's a thing. It's like, hey, if these parents appreciate it, maybe they should take their kids out of government schools and have more control over what their children are learning.
Absolutely.
And how they're spending classroom time. I mean, do you really want to ship them away to be tested by the state for 8 hours? Anyway, just an interesting story. And I applaud this teacher. I wish more folks who are involved in the government schools, like maybe you got into it for the right reasons, or maybe you didn't know about the alternatives, or maybe you weren't a freedom person before you got in. But now you're there. You're stuck in the system. You can still do things to throw a monkey wrench in the gears there, like not doing a state-mandated test. That's pretty revolutionary.
It is.
Well, rolling right along in our evolution to freedom, welfare for weed. This one, again, it's iffy for me because I support people being able to get cannabis for use as medicine or even recreational purposes. But this used to be a joke, Bill. There used to be a joke. It was on Snopes.com, a website that lets people know whether or not some hoax is going on, whether or not it's fake or real. So Snopes.com had an article up on their website saying, no, the story's about the government giving out pot stamps instead of food stamps is not real. That's a fake. That's a fraud. That was a few years ago. Now, a new headline from September 13th, so earlier last week. The federal government is now admitting that welfare recipients can buy marijuana with their benefit money in states where marijuana shops are legal. So the FedGov is very unhappy about this because the FedGov says, hey, pot's illegal. It's bad, okay? But then some states say, oh, sure, it's fine. You can use your EBT card, your welfare food stamps card, to pay for pot. What do you think about this?
Well, you know, I go to first principles again, which is that EBTs shouldn't exist in the first place. I live in southern Arizona, northern Mexico, depending on your perspective. And we hear all the noise down here of illegal immigrants coming up and absorbing a lot of the system benefits that the Fed God delivers. And people say, well, they shouldn't have any right to do that. To which my response is always, well, both Americans and non-Americans should not be on welfare of any type, whether it's corporate welfare and the multi-million dollars or the, you know, the substrata welfare that we see with food stamps, EBTs, DA programs, that kind of thing. So for me, it's wrong for them to purchase anything with money that is ill-gotten and thieved from their neighbors.
Boom. First principles, helping us figure out the world, making it a more understandable place.
Exactly.
How about this one? Can you explain this one to me, Bill? The maker of Vuse, it's an e-cigarette company, they're lobbying to ban vaping. And here's a story from Gizmodo.com. The biggest of the big tobacco companies, R.J. Reynolds, which also owns the fast-growing e-cig brand Vuse, is trying real hard to convince lawmakers to ban vaping. Can you take any wild guesses as to why
the largest tobacco company
would be looking to ban vaping?
And what they're trying to do is they're not trying to ban vaping. They're trying to ban small businesses that vape because big business and big government are husband and wife. They are married to each other. One cannot exist without the other because monopolies can only occur when legal barriers to competition are erected. And that's precisely what R.J. Reynolds did with tobacco. And that's precisely what they're trying to do with this incipient marijuana market.
I love their freedom fear-mongering. Take a listen to this quote by R.J. Reynolds' company rep. Quote, "We believe open system vapor products create unique public health risks. The systems are highly subject to adulteration and tampering. It's just
and
not
substitute
safe.
Substitute computer software instead of vape product. In other words, read, we believe open system software products create unique public health risks. These systems are highly subject to adulteration and tampering."
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing, although you have to add that it's like Microsoft who's saying this, too. Because this is R.J. Reynolds, remember? They're the company that makes Camel cigarettes and a bunch of other products.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
I'm a Microsoft hater, so.
But this is like a cigarette company telling you that there are health risks associated with vaping? I mean,
hey,
seriously?
Remember, though, it was in 1994 that Bill Gates said, the internet, there's no potential in that. 2001. Personal music devices, there's no future in that. 2003. Personal computerized phones, there's no future in that.
No future.
What
there.
Does Microsoft Windows 7 and 8 look like? It looks like Apple. You know, he's been stealing from Jobs for nearly three decades.
Well, you, just changing gears for a little bit, but we're still talking about industry here. Tell me what's going on with the little-known Soviet mission to rescue a dead space station. What's going on there?
You know what? It's so interesting to me. I sent you that, and if you could put it in the show notes for the listening audience, I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm really interested in these kind of technological band-aid missions that occur to take care of problems that weren't anticipated and where they actually succeed in doing so. And what this talks about is where there's a dead Soyuz space station and they send astronauts up there to use knuckle grease and innovation on the fly to fix some problems that they encounter. It's a very interesting story. I'm a big fan of long-form journalism. But what do you suppose the Russian answer, for instance, was to the space pen for which the U.S. government spent tens of millions of dollars to develop? A pen that could be used in zero gravity?
A space pen? Is it like a playpen for astronauts?
Well, no. a space pen in this case would be a writing instrument that would be used, Derek, so that they could have it upside down or zero gravity place where it would actually write. The Russian answer is you use a pencil.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. But the Americans, they developed like millions of dollars of technology.
They spent millions of dollars.
But now we get these crafty pens that write upside down. And I'm excited about it.
And you know what? I'll bet the government didn't have to do that, because if there was a market for it, the market would have provisioned it.
You know, last I was on The Fiends, we talked about a story of some American astronauts or just space lovers taking over a McDonald's and then reclaiming a satellite that had, like, its battery died or something. They found some way to replace it with the solar power that it had on board. And this, like, 30-year-old satellite, they've got it working again, and it's going to be communicating with their little space station down on Earth in McDonald's.
I know. I find that astonishing, because it's been, people talk about NASA and why it's become such a mess today. I mean, it's such a black hole for suborbital space missions, because they never leave the suborbital well, as you'll notice with all the shuttle missions. Well, they ask, well, how did they manage to land on the moon? The first 10 years, in which 69 was the penultimate time that NASA was in business to do that very thing, it was still an innovative, non-bureaucratic laden place.
Uh-huh.
After 69, it started to atrophy, to get sclerotic over time, to get this kind of bureaucratic arthritis that makes fast-running beasts very slow-moving and eventually just lethargic and practically dead in delivering anything of effective means.
Well, that's one way that technology is empowering individuals, that they have more control over the satellites that are orbiting Earth that have been made useless by governments. It's pretty cool.
Well, it's interesting in that story that I sent you on what the Russians did. They do something in that, quote, docking with a non-cooperative object. And how are they going to do that on the fly? And they managed to do it.
How?
I don't want to belabor it now. I would urge your audience to read the article that you're going to post in the show notes.
Yeah, I will post that.
It's got a spoiler graphics. Otherwise.
Yeah, and it does have graphics.
It does.
So it makes it a lot easier to understand. Well, I don't have an easy transition for this, but it's something I want to share with the listeners. I came across something that I think is pretty remarkable today, and it is a breakfast food that I will be making probably as soon as tomorrow morning. All it requires is a potato, an egg, some cheese, some cilantro or some greens or some, and some bacon. And here's what you do. You carve out, you've seen a bread bowl, Bill?
I have.
So like people put soup in these bread bowls. They'll carve out a little top. Like, you're probably carving pumpkins soon, so you get some potatoes, you carve them out like a pumpkin, it's got like a little lid thing, you remove that, fill it up with cheese and bacon, add an egg, some pepper and salt, then some greens, put it in the oven for, I don't know, like 20 minutes or something, then out pops this potato with an egg and cheese and bacon all inside of it, all ready to eat. It's one of the best foods that I've ever seen invented. And I just came across it today. Have you ever seen this? Have you heard of this?
I've never seen that. And I can't, because I'm a paleo dieter, I can't eat bread.
What?
But I could probably find a bread substitute.
You can't, but this isn't bread. It's a potato. Is that the same thing? Or is that...
It is. You know what? Strictly speaking, I'm supposed to avoid potatoes.
Oh, man. Well, if you're not paleo, you get to have some fun eating these potato-y, eggy, cheesy, bacony goodness messes. And that will bring more freedom and happiness into your life. Guaranteed. Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
You've heard of shinybadges.com, but check out the new Causes tab. Every item includes a donation to a worthwhile Liberty project. Buy the Silk Road pin to contribute to the Ross Ulbricht Legal Defense Fund, or buy the Bitcoin Not Bombs t-shirt to contribute to Hoodie the Homeless 2014. Pick from many more. Go to causes.shinybadges.com and get yourself some quality Liberty products that not only start a conversation, but also put your money where your heart is. Plus, get a free gift when you pay with Bitcoin. Causes.shinybadges.com.
Thank you.
whatever sort of tyrants you may come by.
Except the most important government of all, self-government.
Aha, yes, you still get to govern yourself because you own yourself.
Whoa, that's an idea.
Just revolutionary. And more people are catching on to that idea. I think it's attractive. We've talked about how Scotland is warming up to the idea that they'd like to own themselves. Not just William Wallace, but 45% of Scotland, apparently, or of the voting public in Scotland. Unfortunately, that's not quite enough to...
Now, that's 45% of voters, Derek. That doesn't mean the people who stayed home who wanted independence but said, you know, voting is violence, so I'm going to take the philosophical position of objecting to that, and I will remain home and secede all by my lonesome.
Well, I hope they do. I hope they're doing that, and they're writing books and creating media and growing gardens and doing things to increase the freedom in their own lives and to network with their neighbors. I don't think we talked about that enough. Like, as much as independence and secession is important for the individual, what about interdependence? What about those of us... I guess we did talk about this, because there are people moving to New Hampshire and then doing their own thing, like growing gardens or, you know, running for political office, if that's what you're into.
And some people are really good at that. You and Michael Dean are really good at radio broadcasting. Some people are really good at gardening. Some people are really good at being car mechanics. I mean... In the society that you and I envision, the world is our cornucopia, and all we have to do is find the right price between the producer and the one who wants to purchase it.
Ooh, yeah. And we have limitless possibilities of things that
limitless,
we could do.
Limitless, absolutely limitless.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have colonized the solar system by now if it weren't for government.
I get a little bit paralyzed by the idea of too many options. Like, I don't know if you know the Baskin Robbins effect of having too many flavors to choose from. It just makes it like, I don't know what I want. I don't even know if I want ice cream anymore. Let me leave. Like, having too many options for freedom, like, that's the reality for life, is you have all of the options in the world.
But the bright side is the government can always step in and limit those options like they did with National Socialist Healthcare.
Yeah, isn't that great? That is the bright side. So, yeah, it makes those options so much easier for you. Just choose red or blue. And then you can go back to sleep and turn on the television. I don't know.
You and I are rainbow guys.
Yeah, we are.
We envision rainbows because we think that, not that we believe in fairy dust or other kinds of things, but we believe that if you have an all-inclusive, peaceful society, everything's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's actually not too scary, because then I just choose something fun to do, and I realize that, you know, even though life is limited, our time on Earth here is limited, there's still... I mean, you could just spend it. You could fill it up with so many amazing adventures.
And, so many books, so little time, for instance.
So many books, for example. Yeah, that's one. And you recommended one to me earlier. Gladwell? Tell me.
Yes,
tell
Malcolm Gladwell.
What would I learn if I read some Gladwell?
Well, if you read The Tipping Point or Outliers or some of his other books, what you would learn is Gladwell's got this terrific gig going on, Derek. He gets paid millions of dollars to write and speak about the intellectual adventures that he wants to go on. I mean, he's got one of these gigs that I'm very envious of. But what The Tipping Point says is it says that, you know, there's people out there who have this kind of unconscious competence where they are so good at doing something. For instance, the 10,000 hours the Beatles spent together,
yes,
making music, proved out to be the recipe for why they succeeded as wildly well as they did. And Gladwell points that out. He just writes some terrific books, and I think I sent you the link to that. But what here's his, he doesn't have one message, but if there's one message I could divine, it's that if you're an outlier, an underdog, make the most of it.
Make the most of it. That's true. If you're an outlier or an underdog, do some philosophical terraforming. Reach out to those in your community. Help change their minds about the virtues of freedom, about living independently, about living with first principles. Thanks so much, Bill, for being with me tonight and reminding us all to be happy and healthy.
Always an honor, Derek.
You know, I'll leave us with a quote. I'm not sure who said this, but I like it. Peace is a way of being within that brings more peace to the world throughout. I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight. Michael Dean will return to the Freedom Fiends tomorrow evening. Until next time, worms.